This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Hey, Ta. Welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrics, with Botsang Modimo wa me Muyilwa. Another week, another movie, another drama-filled, interesting life we're part of. You know, we are watching history happen in front of us.
The most beautiful part of it is that our kids will watch it on television. If somebody smart wakes up and record the events of what is happening now. Anyway, good morning, Tato. Morning to the followers and the viewers and the haters and the likers and everybody else.
So the first shipload, albeit an airship, of genocide refugees from the country of South Africa landed in the U.S. earlier this week.
Yes, sir.
Who in our wildest dreams would have even thought there'd be genocide refugees from South Africa relocating? The Great Tsek, as some people are calling it.
You call it Great Tsek. South Africans are very creative.
No, they're very fast.
This is what we should call it, the Great Tsek, you know, coming from an Afrikaans word for Tsek. So, Tato, it doesn't come as a surprise to me. It's a surprise that it is being facilitated by the Americans. And then, but it has been happening, albeit silently, and people were quiet. People, especially, and I want to be specific, the so-called Afrikaners, and you know why I'm calling them so-called Afrikaners. For many of the foreigners, people, you know, watchers of this show, viewers of this show, Afrikaner is actually an Afrikaans word, which means an African. Now, they are calling us black, they are calling themselves African, and I get offended by that. And I even said in one of my pieces this week, I prefer to call them Boers, which the Americans were misled. They were given a direct translation of a Boer or a Boer is a farmer. But to us, that's not what it meant. It actually meant the racist Dutch settlers.
Yes. You
understand? And when for us, actually, to say to a person, just a Boer man or you are a Boer, you don't mean you are a farmer. That's not what it means in South African terms.
But hence, I'm always cautious when people, not even, I always say to people, don't be literal in how you hear struggle songs.
Yes, yes. Because you'll make a mistake.
And not that I'm justifying kill the Boer, because I don't think there's a place to sing that song anymore.
Yeah.
In this country. But having said that, though, people are very quick to want to be literal about it and almost imply that black people are so stupid that because Malema is singing a song, they're going to go out and kill people.
They're going to, yeah, well, look, that's what has been, you know, planted in the minds of foreigners.
Yeah.
And that's what they are thinking. But anyway, for me, this, look, I'm just disappointed that it's 49 of them. If it could have been 490,000 of them, I would have been much more happy. The numbers are very slow. Because when you have people who are derailing the whole change that is needed in South Africa with lies, you know, untruthful statements, and I can tell you, Tato and the viewers, it does not mean the Americans are not aware that these people are lying, that they've been fed lies.
They're pawns.
They're pawns. They're being used as political pawns and political gameplays. Let me first start by talking about how the immigration laws work, you know, in line with what we last week discussed. It is too much of a coincidence that the Constitutional Court a week ago ruled, actually, to be exact, last week Monday, they ruled that the Section 6.1 of the Citizenship Act is not in line with the Constitution. Exactly 1 week after, then we have these South African citizens who are naturally born in South Africa, and now they are going to get a dual citizenship with the USA. Immediately that, people are saying it's a coincidence. For me, it's not a coincidence. It is a well-planned, well-orchestrated move by the Democratic Alliance and its allies of the right-wingers, which is AfriForum and Solidarity, the Union. They have been working on this for quite some time. They just waited for the Democratic government in the U.S. to go out and the Republicans to come in, and knowing President Trump, ultra-rightist and what we call the white supremacists. Then they went on. That's why the first, you know, December, January, February, during after Trump's winning of the elections, then the inauguration, then taking office, the Democratic Alliance, Solidarity, and the Afri Forum have been making so many trips and calls to the USA. So it was a well-planned thing. But why? Because the only white South Africans who will leave this country and lie and complain about the status quo is the supremacist, is those racist white people who never thought that a black person will sit in the union building, will take over government offices, will run the country. Whether we do it wrong or right, that's not the issue to be discussed. You know, I tend to recall the words of the great Lion of Azania, Zephaniah Motsepe, the former president of the PAC, who was the number one accused for the 1976 uprising, used to say to us, even if you remain minority or 10, when you take over government, even if you misgovern and misrule yourself, it's much more better to be misgoverned than misruled by a colonial settler. Because we can sort ourselves out internally like we're doing with the ANC at the moment. Yes. Understand? Than to be misled and misruled and misgoverned by a foreigner. Now, these people, I don't know what was the purpose, but I'll come to the second part of it to give the purpose. What was the purpose of them lying when actually it's factual, fresh, it's on record. White people are living better, are safer in South Africa now than they were during the apartheid era. During the apartheid era, they were faced with bombs from Umkhonto we Sizwe, with scorpion machines, guns, and AK-47s from Mazandla and APLA forces. They were met with riots by the youth in their country, by the uprisings of whether 76, 85, or whenever. They had challenges. Their lives were in threat. They were bombed in bars. They were not safe in working places. They were not safe on the street. That stopped in the early 90s, before even 1994, 1992, 1993. There were no targets of white people being attacked by the former liberation movements. If they want to use the crime in South Africa that we all are crying about, all of us are affected by crime, not only the farmers in South Africa, not only the Afrikaners or the Boers, including there's Portuguese nationals in this country, there's British nationals in this country, there's a lot of Germans and all who are white people. And even in their supremacism or whiteness, they are still South African. They're affected by crime like it affects you. Somebody was talking statistics to say, if you look at the number of white people attacked and black, and I'm like, it's obvious because black people will be in majority, but there is generally high levels of crime in the Republic of South Africa.
And you know, that was my argument on one of the posts on Instagram. When someone was saying, but we can't compare the number of deaths of black men to those of white people because statistically they're more black men anyway.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is all of us are under siege.
Yes.
Every single one of us. And you also need to understand that criminals are cowards.
Exactly.
They look for soft targets. And they also look for isolated targets.
Exactly.
They look for easy targets. But over and above that, they also go for targets that look like it would be a lucrative a job.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, for a lot of criminals, they think white people will have money. So they might break into a white person's house before a black person's house because they think they want to get more out of that house. But we are all under siege. We're all in the same boat. And if this boat sinks, all of us are going down with it.
Yes, you know, Tato,
but don't be disingenuous now and say there's a genocide and your life is in danger.
Well, there is genocide in South Africa, and when I look at it, the genocide we are faced with, it's black children, of which in 2-3 months, over 30 of them died, were killed by poisoning.
Yeah.
For me, that's genocide.
Yeah.
And there is genocide in South Africa when over 20 people in Hammanskraal die because of poisonous or contaminated water. That's the kind of genocide we should be talking about. When we have one isolated attack of a farmer in the Free State or Eastern Cape or Limpopo by criminals. It's a criminal activity. And I want to borrow the words of Gating McKenzie, the current Minister of Arts, Sports and Culture, who's also the leader of Patriotic Alliance. Gating McKenzie once said, the problem with the farmers, especially the Boers, is that they go, and that's why they've always been anti-immigration laws, they go and they hire foreign nationals without vetting them. Understand? And we know, courts have proved that most of the time, people who commit farm murderers, they were found to be foreigners, either Zimbabweans or Mozambicans, robbing and all that. And who are these people? Some are pure criminals who come from outside. Some are people who work, who are employed by those farmers.
Disgruntled.
Disgruntled. But you know why they employ them? Because of cheap labor. Because South African black farm workers became unionized. They had unions representing them. None of us is going to sit here and condone a, what do you call it, murder of anybody, black or white, pink or purple. We are not going to be doing that. But they should not lie. Now, coming to the political part of it, let me tell you what is my view. And when I prepared to come to the show last night, I was saying, I hope Tato is not going to start and say, what is your conspiracy theory? This is not conspiracy, bro. It's based on my experience, you know, in working abroad international. Let me tell you, the Americans, there's a very serious problem economically in the world, and the way South Africa is occupying a very strategic position geographically and politically. If you are going to add diplomatically, we are one of the few countries in the world that has two oceans or two seas. Mm. As the two oceans meet at our shore, we have nuclear capabilities. We know that South Africa can produce nuclear weapons, nuclear energy. You know, we have those capabilities. We have the gas in Mossel Bay and all those. America is interested in those minerals. America is also worried that those things should not fall in the hands of our friends, which is Russia and China, and other new friends who are coming up like Iran. The Americans are worried about that. So they've done their homework. They are not stupid. America is also looking at the influence of the South African government or South Africa, the country, into the African continent, particularly the SADC region. You understand? America has occupied almost every region of the world. They are in West Africa. They are in North Africa. They are in East Africa. They have occupied Central Africa in terms of the Great Lakes. They have bases everywhere. They have rattled. They have influenced politics. They've assisted in regime changes in the African continent like they've done all over the world, except in the SADC region. The only thing that Americans have in the SADC region, it is the Air Force military base in Botswana. You understand? Which it has not worked effectively for them, because the Botswana government under President Khama, when they received the Americans to can have an Air Force base there, it was clearly for training purposes, to say, come and train Botswana pilots. Remember, President Khama was an Air Force pilot himself.
Yes, sir.
But the Americans had a strategy. They knew what they were doing. They wanted to infiltrate the SADC region. Why Botswana? Because Botswana was complacent to and be nice to America, but also the Botswana, Gaborone, the capital of Botswana, it's also the home of the Southern African Development Community. The SADC headquarters are sitting in the capital of Botswana, in Gaborone. So the Americans use this strategy very well. What disturbed the Americans not to grow bigger and faster is because the new democracy, under the leadership of particularly President Mbeki, they were not going to allow the Americans to expand here. They had a problem of Mugabe, they had the problem of Museveni. So most of the African countries, they had a problem of President Sam Nujoma in Namibia. So most of the African countries were not going, they were seeing Americans as imperialist, as the enemy, as not welcome in the SADC region, especially before it was called SADC, when it was still the frontline states. That's why they couldn't penetrate the region and set up bases. But what will be the best position for the Americans to be in the SADC region? South Africa is the best position. We've got the sea, we've got the infrastructure, we've got military capabilities. And this is where America has targeted who? White Afrikaners. Why white Boers or Afrikaners? It's because they were in the forefront in charge of the development of SASOL, the development of the nuclear power stations, the dismantling of the nuclear power stations. They've got the blueprint. They've got the historical background. What do? You infiltrate them. You take the people who are sitting in Orania, you invite them to the U.S. Russia has done it yesterday. America has been doing it all the years. They invite these people to come and live in those countries. We'll accommodate you. You live well with us. They even created a special program. Refugee admission program for South Africa. You understand? This refugee program of the U.S., it has always been there. It's called actually USA Refugee Program, or Admission Program. They've made special one for South Africa with a special decree. Why? Because they are looking for spies. They are looking for mercenaries. They are looking for people who know the in and outs of South Africa. They will take care of them in order to learn more to come. So once the reports of these ones, they even sent a jet to come and pick them up. That's how special they are.
But I was going to say, though, help me understand. I am fearing persecution. I am running away. But there's a whole send-off party at an airport.
Yes.
And the South African government have even vetted them. If the refugees, how do they have time to be packing bags nicely, a chartered plane? Because most refugees I've met didn't even have a passport.
Exactly. And actually, you are running away from the South African government that you claim that they are persecuting you. Yet the same South African government is at the airport with all high-level officials to vet and clear you that you are not a wanted criminal, you are not on the wanted list, you don't have criminal records. This is a well-orchestrated process. But I also think, Thato, the South African government is handling it wrong. I think we have paid too much attention to what I call this American nonsense. The South African government responded with an official diplomatic note, or note verbale, as it's called, a statement to say there's no genocide in South Africa, there's no taking land from white Africaners, there's no persecution. We should have stopped there. This thing of President Ramaphosa, Deputy President Mashatile, Minister Lamola, everybody, and Fikile Mbalula, and Nomvula Mokoena, everybody else is jumping around. The people who started this nonsense, AfriForum, and the DA, and Solidarity, where are they? They are quiet.
Yeah, but AfriForum are saying we never said there was a genocide.
Yeah, but they said that and they pulled back. They've got the government jumping and losing focus. South Africa has lost focus at the moment in geopolitics. Sure. We're supposed to be focusing very strongly on hosting the G20. We're supposed to be focusing on BRICS is growing bigger and bigger. We are losing our relevance on BRICS. Ethiopia and Egypt are actually, I will not be surprised if Ethiopia and Egypt come up as the permanent members. So one of them of BRICS than South Africa, who's a founder member. Those are the areas we're supposed to be focusing on, not the threats of a few bunch of minorities that America prefers to lure into the United States, Ohio for that matter. No, imagine that.
And you know, I'd have respect for this 49 if they were honest enough to say, listen, I don't feel I have any chance of success in South Africa as things stand, for whatever your reasons may be.
Yes.
And that is why I am choosing to go.
Exactly.
Many people have been doing that for the last 30 years.
Yes.
That I don't think my kids have a future here, so I'm going to relocate. But the minute you do it behind a lie, you're endorsing the lie.
Exactly.
But you still want the very same government you're demonizing to help expedite the whole thing.
Yeah. Also, you still want the government you are demonizing and lying about to keep its gates open, so that if things goes wrong that side, or you are not comfortable, you know, you find that it's not as green as that, then we must welcome you back. You see, that's the other part where I'm saying the government actually is actually playing into the gallery in the hands of these people. Because right now, with the Constitutional Court ruling, and I said it last week, everybody who has relinquished his South African citizenship or residence is now having it back fully. These people can sit in the U.S., vote for Trump again next time, or vote for Trump to change the Constitution, and vote for us through the DA, or Freedom Front Plus to change what is going on in the country. And you know, I read that statement of the Americans, the same decree, that, and it says it has three or four conditions. One, you must be an Afrikaner, mm-hmm. of Afrikaner origin. You must, or the key word there is or. Mm. Or you must be part of the minority. Mm-hmm. You have been suppressed or excluded, understand, or things like that. And you must, your culture and your language must be suppressed. Who are the most minority people in this country? Mm. Are the Sen, the South African natives, the Sen, the so-called Khoi, yeah. are the most minority people in this country. Majority of them, if they don't speak the Sen or the Khoi language, they end up becoming colored and speaking Africans.
Yes.
Understand? They don't have land. They don't have rights. How many people? I've been working in government for almost 30 years. I've never seen one Sen people employed by the government of the Republic of South Africa as an employee of the state. Mm-hmm. So the Sen people are actually the minority, the most discriminated, and they can speak a native African language and Africans. You understand? They are the indigenous people, the most repossessed people. Before us, the Bantus yes. started breaking from the north, coming to side. At least we're still Africans. It's them. Then followed by the colored people. They speak Africans. They are minority. We have a case in court now where a high court has ruled that one of the tertiary institutions must pay a colored lady who had a big BA honors degree, competed for a job with a white lady, an African lady, who had matric. Mm. The African lady got the job. The court has now ruled that this color, so-called colored person must be paid 700,000, which is the annual salary for their job, yes. for being denied that opportunity. You understand? Mm. So I do not know when people start saying, and President Ramaphosa must go and meet President Trump and tell him that we don't have to. America has the embassy in South Africa.
Yes.
They've got personnel.
And they're away.
And they're away. And they know the truth.
And President Ramaphosa said last week that he was on the phone with President Trump, and he told him that everything that you are claiming and everyone else is claiming is a lie. And you know what? Everyone, you can't deny people's lived experiences. Mm-hmm. And if your lived experience in this country is all I've experienced is crime, and I want to leave for that, we will grant you that. It's your lived experience.
Some people but live don't for lie, pastures.
But don't lie and say you are being persecuted.
No. There's no persecution. But you see, I think this whole project as well, I think it is failing its natural death, because I've seen a lot of white supremacists in America are not, you know, I'm glad that the so-called black Americans or African Americans, I have taken a step back and are quiet about this. They are letting white people to fight each other for the space in America. I've seen quite a number of Boers in South Africa, real farmers, Boers, standing up and saying, we are not part of this nonsense. Mm. We don't know about, yes, there's crime in the country, and we are addressing the government and the presidents to say, how can we improve this? I personally know, Tato, that quite a number of Afrikaner communities have created even security, depending where you live. Mm. I live in an Afrikaner or Boers dominated town, you know, that my place is there. Mm. And I can tell you that part of the security that I continued, me and my dogs and kids, to enjoy there, it is because of the African community who said, we will protect our neighborhood.
Yes.
Farmers have created those kind of things. Why? Why? Because they've got the resources. Mm. They've got the land. They know the area. They've been living there. We come from townships and villages, and we occupied these places. So I don't think, my conclusion on this matter is that I don't think the South African government should continue to waste its resources, emotions, time, and whatever, to try and tell the truth, because the truth is there. If there's genocide, you must see people running away, carrying only their babies and a bottle of water. Not this one with Louis Vuitton and K-Way and Adidas.
And luggage.
And nice luggages, and even taking photos or having time for photo shoot.
And a chartered flight.
And a chartered flight being sent to pick them up. That's not refugees. And the Americans must actually be honest to themselves They will not tell the world that they want, they are looking for mercenaries.
Yeah.
They are looking for spies. They are looking for former apartheid agent police to go and groom them, brainwash them, send them back to South Africa so that they can do their operations in the Republic of South Africa. And if our national intelligence agency or state security agency is not aware now, they're sleeping. They're not aware what is going on.
We often joke about it, but we see it in December. Asylum seekers going home for Christmas.
Yes.
You know, to different countries in the SADC region that might have asylum seekers living in this country. So surely the minute you're an asylum seeker, you can't just go back home for a braai. So what should happen when they come back then? Because
like
surely then you lose your refugee status
yes.
the minute you go back to the scene of the crime, in inverted commas.
Time will come. We'll see when that moment arrives, when they miss Portugal and Burevoros and Kruger Park and our nice weather with four seasons. We'll see. They will come back home. I want to see at that time what the Americans will be saying. But you know, there's another thing that somebody brought to my attention over a drink during the course of this week. He said, but you know, there's another element. America is the next host of the Rugby World Cup. They may be looking for players. They may be looking for fans to can create that big fan.
Unlikely.
Tato, where there's money, bro? Americans will send a Boeing 747 every month to fly people to the U.S. to prepare for the Rugby World Cup. And this, who didn't want, if you're a rugby fan, who didn't want to be at the Rugby World Cup final for free? Not to say, in their flags, they'll be cheering the Americans.
Yeah.
In their hearts, they'll be singing Die Borke. I'm telling you, this has a bigger picture. But for me, it's more political. It's challenging Russia not to can pick up on these people who are former military agents. They work for the army and all that. And for me, that's that. The USA wants to infiltrate the Republic of South Africa politically, diplomatically, and militarily. And this is just one of the options they want to use. I mean, there's youngsters there. There's kids as age as our kids, 9 and 10. To take those kids to America now is the best time to brainwash a person. It's the best time to colonize, the new form of neo-colonization of the African child.
Now, President Trump alluded to the fact that next week he's meeting President Ramaphosa.
Yes.
To discuss G20 stuff, he said. Now, a lot of people are saying, should President Ramaphosa walk into that lion's den because they will Zelensky him the way they've been doing other leaders? Should he go for this meeting?
Look, I think he will go. I think he will go. The way the government has been talking is that President Ramaphosa is itching to meet President Trump. At least in the last 1 month, he has had two telephone conversations with President Trump. You understand? I think he will go. I think he should go. But to focus on many other things, let this thing of refugees, if America wants to take care of South African refugees, let them do that. You can't stop them. But we have other bigger agenda issues. We've got the PEPFAR issue. We've got the WHO funding. We've got AGOA issues. We've got bilateral diplomatic relations between the USA, which is the second largest trade partner of South Africa. We've got America being angry with South Africa for being part of BRICS. While America is friends with Russia, they don't want South Africa to be friends with Russia. We've got the Americans very uncomfortable with the relationship between South Africa and Iran. Understand? By that bilateral relationship, which Iran has now become multilateral because Iran is now part of BRICS, we have the Americans still upset that South Africa took Israel. They are, how many provinces, how many states are in the U.S.? 52, 53. The extra one is Israel. And South Africa took Israel to the ICJ, and they took Benjamin Netanyahu and with military generals to the ICC. The USA is very upset with that. This is the time that President Ramaphosa and his delegation, led by the Minister of Dereko, must go and again engage the Americans regarding that. It will also give President Ramaphosa an opportunity to test the waters, Tato, to test the waters with the kind of diplomat, ambassador, who will send to the U.S. Remember, we still have that hanging. So there's quite a number of bilateral issues. We are hosting a G20 multilateral engagement in South Africa. And President Trump and his foreign secretary have said, we are not coming there. We've got other important things to look at. Trust me, if this meeting goes well, Trump may come to the G20. You know why? Because they still want to assert themselves and demonstrate control. So if they leave this going, decisions will be made without them. They will be left behind. And I don't think Americans are that naive politically and global politics to get missed. If this G20 thing sails, Americans will be left behind. Yeah. And I don't think they're going to play that game. Look, they've rattled the world and us in the last 3 months, but I think they were testing the waters. They wanted to see, who's our friend? Who's begging us? We are one of those on the fence. We are one of the beggars of USA. You understand? And for me, that's a challenge because it's short-term lived and it's still minimal. It's focusing on one trade partner, one country. Are we saying if we make relations with, let's say, 5 enemies of the U.S. And trade with them, won't we beat the economy of the U.S.? I don't have the figures, but I think if we start exporting and trading with Iran, with Russia, including with North Korea, we will make more money and more balance of payments than with the U.S. So we should not limit. We're living in a multipolar, you know, geopolitics at the moment. We cannot be hamstrung by the Americans. The British, who were our colonizers, they failed to do that. Why do we allow the Americans to do that? But I don't think President Trump will pull a Zelensky on President Ramaphosa. I doubt.
I think they're going to try and embarrass him. They want to try and embarrass him. Generally, supremacists want to put a black man in his place. I think they're going to embarrass
him. That's the challenge.
Or they're going to try and embarrass
him. They're going to try. I think President Ramaphosa and the South African team will go there prepared and you know, to avoid embarrassment. And you know, Cyril Ramaphosa is also not a good public speaker. So sitting there in front of cameras and the Americans, look, he's a trained lawyer and he's said to be a businessman. He must just prepare himself to try and do things when Trump embarrasses him. He must find a diplomatic way of avoiding that kind of embarrassment. But I think the engagement is necessary. We need it as a nation.
Sure.
We need it as a bilateral trade partner with the U.S., but we should not be victims of the American imperialism and white supremacism. And because Americans are like, President Trump and his quartet, it's white supremacist. That's what we call it. They want to demonstrate and to white supremacists in South Africa. Yes, Tato, if you look at the situation, the Americans are even asking President Kagame to receive some of the deportees.
Did they ask or do you think he offered?
Look, they've been looking like the British did. They've been looking at where can they send these people. And I think the Americans approached him on the basis that he did it or he was about to do it for the British. And therefore, he still has space. Because remember, those ones from England didn't come after the EU court intervention.
Yes,
the preparations are there, the facilities are there. But you have a country that deports people, particularly people of color. As black people are called, or colors, or Latinos, and they deport them, and yet they import refugees of extremist right, you know, extremists.
You know the weird thing, and I don't know if anyone's reporting on this, because obviously the Northern Hemisphere are going into their summer, and spring break and American summer are a big deal in America.
Okay.
But I read somewhere that the number of people flying into the U.S. for their summer and for spring break is lower than it's ever been because people are scared to travel there.
But why are they scared? Is it because of the tariffs or the regime change?
No, nothing to do with tariffs. Because I agree, now they say we have a right to look into your phone. We will check your phone.
Okay.
If you've said anything that is anti-Trump, that could be used against you.
Yeah.
So people who have American visas are choosing to not travel for now.
Well, Tata, that's a problem. And I know that Americans, when they issue their visas, I think my visa was valid for 10 years, but it was on my official passport. So I literally do not have my private visa. It's going to be a problem. And I don't know if it's wise for President Trump and the Republicans to actually push the old school white supremacy that's going to make tourists and people not to go to the USA. You know,
sure.
I don't think it's a good move, especially with multipolar global politics at the moment.
Yes.
Politics, and it's no longer about trade dominance only. They have to do with tourism, it has to do with the money that you will spend when you visit the US, but also building cordial relationships.
Yes.
You know how nice it will be for Americans to travel anywhere in the world for free. Not
yes.
free cost, but being free people who are not afraid to be looked at as Americans.
And in fact, one of the things that people started complaining about when USAID was discontinued was the fact that USAID did more for American goodwill globally than anything else American.
For goodwill, actually, the Americans on the aid, even if we know it was espionage and political,
yes.
it brought them more goodwill than the European aid.
Absolutely.
The European aid, the European countries like France, UK, Italy, they actually wanted to exert their colonial dominance on the former colonies.
Mm.
While the US aid, to some extent, to some level, it made them look like good people.
Yes.
And I can talk for African countries.
Like I said, my mom is a recipient of US aid. She she studied in Delaware for 2 years.
Yes, you told me the other day. Yes,
through
yes.
USAID.
Yeah. So they are killing all that, but the Americans deserve what they have. They deserve these racist Afrikaners. They deserve President Trump. They voted.
Mm.
It's an American democracy. They want to make America great again. Making America great again, it means, you know, there's only about 58% of Americans are white.
It's more like making America white again.
Yes, because they are realizing it's diminishing. Mm. In the next 10 to 15
Maybe
years.
Maybe because they know how Americans are treated when they're minorities, because they've been at the giving end of this, that they don't want to be a minority.
But
they,
you see,
food for thought.
The same, no, you are correct, the same as the Afrikaners in South Africa. They know how it is like to be minority and ill-treat other people.
Yes.
They are afraid that the American whites will be minority in the next 10 or 15 years. The Latinos are going to take over that country, trust me.
Mm.
And Latinos, the Latin Americans and Africans or African Americans, they will come together to be more in numbers than the white Americans. That's why they have to import white people to increase the numbers.
And deport brown people.
And deport brown people.
But anyway, I think we've spent more time on this than we ought to, so let's go to our courts. There's quite a lot happening in our courts.
Yes, sir.
Delays in the Mbenenge case.
Yes.
Omotosho was back in court,
mm-hmm.
and then he was free again.
Yeah.
What's happening in our courts?
There's another one that there was another big case in the country. I forgot which one, but let's start with Mbenenge's case, which is it's an internal administrative court. It's a tribunal of the Judicial Service Commission. Look, what is happening there? It's actually I'm glad this is done by lawyers and judges to each other.
Yes,
they will realize that delayed justice, because everybody who's involved there, it's a secretary of the judges in the High Court, and is a provincial judge president of the Eastern Cape, represented by the highest ranking senior counsel in the country, advocate Sikakani. So let them feel and taste the wrath of the injustice of the justice system that I've always talked about.
Yes.
This delay, you know, Tato, on Monday, the judge president, Mbenenge, was supposed to take the seat.
Eastern Cape judge president.
Yes, the Eastern Cape judge president. I think Monday or Tuesday was supposed to take the seat. No, it was supposed to take seat on Tuesday.
Yeah.
On Monday, at the end of the hearing for Monday, when the applicant or the complainant closed their case, they requested the presiding officer, the chairperson of the hearing, that they want to bring, now this was very bizarre for me, they want to bring a gender violence expert of Xhosa, and they were specific to say that person must be Xhosa who speaks the same language as the complainant and the defendant.
Okay, so they don't understand the nuances of even the emojis.
Even the emojis and the language, because some things that me and you say in Setswana during sexual talks, the Xhosa people may say differently.
Ah.
So they need to bring a Xhosa expert.
So for instance, for us, in Xhosa, bribing is something else to us, for instance.
Exactly. It means something totally different.
Okay.
You understand? So they I mean, this is a judge president of the province of Eastern Cape.
Mm.
Now, While they are going to look for that person, it's going to be very interesting for me if that expert will be male or female. Because the problem in South Africa, when we speak of gender-based violence or gender inequality, people always think female, except despite the fact that men are killed, men are raped or sodomized, whatever you call it. Men are beaten, men are murdered in South Africa, sometimes by women, most of the time by men. So once you start saying gender and you look at the feminist activism, you are misplaced. Okay. So I want to see if this expert is going to be, and they have until it's going to be a male or female, and they have until the 30th. The matter has been postponed to the 30th of June, given 11 days that the matter must be wrapped up by the 11th of July. But hear what Advocate Sikakani, the defense lawyer, is saying. He's saying once that gender expert, Xhosa gender expert, comes in and present their papers and their affidavits and statements, they will have to study them, and they may also call in a counter expert. This may delay the case further. Now, what it does to the two individuals, the judge president of the Eastern Cape, Mbenenge, as well as the complainant, I just forgot her name, what does it do to them? Delayed processes, delayed justice. What does it do to their personality and the families? Sure. Because this is actually have an impact on the families of these people.
Sure.
And it demonstrates how delayed justice is unfair to human beings in South Africa. Although this is, you know, about a month or two, some of us have waited for 3 years now for the wheels of justice to turn. But it's an unfortunate situation. You know, if our courts can be empowered by the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, as well as the government, the Treasury, be given resources to can complete any case, especially emotional cases like labor, rape, murder. Those are very emotional cases, and they should be completed as soon as possible. Imagine I was sitting in a divorce case for 4 years. What happens in the 4 years? Your life is hanging.
Sure.
You understand? And I think it's just, you know, unfortunate that we'll have to wait until July. I'm suspecting it's going to go beyond the 11th of July.
Yeah. Her name is Andy Swamengo.
Yes. That's the complainant. Yeah,
absolutely. So basically she's saying the judge president was sexually harassing me.
Yes.
There's even an allegation of him indecently exposing himself to her.
Yes. And now they're calling an expert too.
And he is saying everything was consensual.
Again, Tato, some people brought the issue of labor, the subordinate.
The power dynamic.
The power dynamic. Yeah.
Because sometimes as a boss, you might think she likes me back, can't she's scared that I'll lose my job if I don't act in place.
Yes.
If I don't fall into place, I might lose my job.
Or if I don't respond in a manner that will calm him down.
Yes.
And then as a man, when you respond, and I'm not justifying, when you realize that the person is playing the game you think has fallen into a relationship or wanting, you know, all that. You know, this is so embarrassing. I mean, I've said before.
The fact that, you know, even just for a judge president to be saying it was consensual when he had no business there in the first place.
That's what I'm saying. It's embarrassing because I've continuously said judges and politicians are also human beings. So when they do things that Botan does in corners, it's just that mine are never in the public space, or maybe I play it nicer than them, people get surprised. Judges are human beings.
There's a saying, though, that if you're going to hanky-panky, find someone with just as much to lose as you.
Exactly. You must actually, my brother Pule, no reference, always says to me, Botan, you must date in your league.
Sure.
Or you will get into trouble. If you're going on to go and go around with people who have nothing to lose, I'm not saying Andiswa has nothing to lose.
Sure.
She's a mother, she's an adult, she's got a career, and she's got a lot to lose as well, because now the country or social media is already divided by not applying their minds, by looking at the emojis. And you know what? Cell phones. Did I tell you that in Germany they call cell phone a handy? They're using an English word.
Okay.
It's called a handy, a cell phone. And I asked them, why do you call this a handy? And they said they took it from the, it's a handy tool.
Ah.
Understand? They took it from the English word because it's a handy tool.
So they went literal with it.
They went literal. Mm. But let me tell you, cell phones have created problems for us. They were supposed to make our lives easier. They've broken relationships. They've made people to be tracked.
Let's not blame cell phones. We must blame the flawed nature of human beings.
It's
like blaming the gun. It's like, human beings are flawed. And sometimes really stupid.
I think we are more stupid than anything else.
And unfortunately, a lot of things that are being made to be convenient for us are also dumbing us down.
Yeah. I agree with you. Same as driving, moving from a manual car to automatic. I don't know when I started driving an automatic, how many times I fell asleep on the road because nothing was distracting me.
You've stopped working now.
Yeah, I stopped working. And then you add cruise control.
Sure.
Another thing that's actually supposed to be aiding us to relax your feet and your ankles. It has actually been proven by researchers that cruise control is one of the reasons people fall asleep when they are on the road. You drive an auto, you put on cruise control, you know you are at 115 kilometers per hour, you fall asleep. But it's human beings.
Absolutely.
My brother. Then what did you mention after Mbemenge?
Also, there was a raid on the Pretoria High Court.
Yeah, you know, before we even go to Omotoso, I nearly forgot there's raid on the Pretoria High Court. You remember about 3 or 4 weeks back, we spoke about the corruption in courts being conducted by court officials.
Sure.
And I had that firsthand, in the labor court. And the other day, Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development went into the Weinberg Magistrate Court, went into the one in East Trent or Ekurhuleni, I forgot the famous court in Ekurhuleni.
Okay.
And her response as the minister was like, I've never seen so corruption in front of my eyes happening.
Yes.
Police, magistrate, and everybody else. And it shows how the lives of people, in this instance, certainly other people are ululating it because it was for foreign nationals. Court officials abuse their powers. Pardon me. They would issue court summonses or notices of summonses to the known foreign nationals whose permits have expired or their visa and things like that, or knowing them because they've made applications. This is what they do. It's like the police in Midrand police station, and I will say it because they've happened to me and I've complained formally. They will know that you are arrested for drinking while you are suspect. And then they will call you to ask for a bribe to say they'll kill your case and they are lawyers.
We can make it go away, basically.
We can make it go away. Where do they get that information, these lawyers? So these are what the court officials are doing. Well, allegedly. But the Hawks or the SAU who raided them? They would have not raided that court with a surprise raid,
yes,
if they didn't have material evidence of that happening in court. And they are targeting foreigners who are legal. And I said, because their permits have expired. Or they know that these people are in their country and they are waiting or pending Home Affairs approving or renewing their permits.
So already they're at a desperate point.
Now look what our people are doing. They're harassing people who have come forward to say, I want to have a valid visa or permit to be in South Africa. They're harassing them. And that's why these people end up being illegal immigrants, not applying for papers. Because once you get a court order, it's more expensive to can go and defend that in court, and risky than those who are paying bribes of 300-400 rands to the police on the street.
Yeah.
So this whole value chain of corruption in our courts, the conniving of prosecutors, police, as well as court officials. Imagine a court clerk, and I'm not undermining clerks or senior officials. I started working as a clerk in government. But imagine a whole court clerk having your life hostage because you are refusing to pay 15,000 or 10,000, whatever the amount is. And I think, the Minister of Justice and that department, the ministry, must really assert themselves and put their foot down. One of the things that will stop this nonsense with court officials, it will not stop it completely, is to do a lifestyle audit of court officials.
Yeah, but Panyaza did it the other day with Gauteng officials, and some were found to be wanting.
Yes. Some will not even respond to the questions of the investigation. Lifestyle audit is going to be very important. I think the government, as much as they've got on the Z83 form declaration of interest and declaration of criminal records, they must add declaration of lifestyle audit on resuming due to renewing contracts.
Oh, yes.
It must not happen. They must do it at the beginning. Mm. Less people are lying about their background and criminal records because it's a question on applying for a job. You understand? It's there. So imagine if we put lifestyle audit there to say, bring your income and expenditure statement and your assets you own.
Standardize it.
It must be a prerequisite.
Yeah.
I would suggest that that's what the government should do. Mm. Make a lifestyle audit as a prerequisite on resumption of duty or renewal of contract. Mm. You understand? Then you will see how many people will not respond to that, how many people will resign. And you know, these things are happening. But our courts are faced with problems. People have been complaining about the police are doing their job. We are being let down by the National Prosecuting Authority and the courts. Mm. And then people will blame the police to say, you arrested the person is out on the street tomorrow. Mm. They don't understand. It is not the police. The police investigate, arrest, and hand over. When they think there's a case, they hand over to the National Prosecuting Authority. And they leave it there. The next time the police come is to come and testify in court when the NPA has decided to prosecute.
Yes,
so we must stop blaming the police where our courts are failing.
Mm.
I'm one of the people who think the South African Police Service is doing much better. They are doing very, but their hands are tight.
Sure.
Understand? So that's one of the challenges.
You can't even defend yourself without people saying, why is this person dead?
Yes.
You can't even defend yourself.
Actually, you can't even defend yourself with a firearm that you are carrying when people are beating you as a policeman. As long as they are not taking out pangas to stab you or a gun to shoot, they must first take out pangas, threaten your life or stab you. Then you can take out a firearm and defend yourself.
Mm.
And that's why people are now calling that the South African Police Service must become a South African police force, like it used to do. Not the apartheid type, but to enforce the law, not to service. You know, as Bekkie Cele said the other day, that's one thing I'll never forget about Bekkie Cele. He says, he was talking about the gender-based violence and domestic violence. He says, policemen must stop going to people's houses when Thato is beating his girlfriend and the girlfriend that called the police. They must not say, knock, knock, hello, we are police. And then he said, you are not carrying broomsticks and feather dusters. You are carrying guns.
Yeah.
Use them because that man may open the door and shoot the policeman.
Mm-hmm.
But many may say, I'm condoning violence. I believe in responding to violence with violence.
Mm.
That's the only way.
But I think violence with violence aside, zero tolerance alone goes a long way in enforcing anything.
Exactly.
Zero tolerance.
If
you don't have to be brutal about it. You don't have to brutalize people. You don't have to have people living in fear.
Yes.
But the minute people know that there's zero tolerance,
exactly,
they're less likely to transgress.
Absolutely.
And I saw it personally in the UK. I have two friends in the UK whose licenses were suspended. They do not dare drive, like zero, because they know they'll be passed.
You see, those are some measures. I mean, we can. Our next talk is about the Omotoso case.
Yeah.
You know why TV evangelist Omotoso is so comfortable? He has even divided the nation. The nation and parliament are divided because of Omotoso's case. Politicians are divided. The guy is, in my words, raping the South African justice system.
Mm.
He is absolutely using the provisions of the South African justice and the South African constitution. The release on the past week, was it Monday or Tuesday, whenever?
Yes, sir.
His release was based on two aspects.
Mm.
One, it was based on Section 35 of the Constitution.
Okay.
And people must not read us wrong thinking we are supporting Omotoso, we are in for Omotoso. We are just explaining what let him out. It's not the court.
Is it 35 or 38?
Is it a 38 or 35? I'm not sure. Of the Constitution.
Yes.
That says when you are arrested, you must be brought to court within 48 hours.
Sure.
Okay? He was arrested. Now, this is where Home Affairs made a big mistake. He was arrested 7 o'clock on, even the court made a mistake, 7 a.m. on Saturday morning. Courts open around 8:30, 9 o'clock in South Africa. At 7 a.m. on Monday morning, he should have appeared in court. it had expired the 48 hours. But I think the magistrate or the judge, I think it's a magistrate court, erred there, because the Immigration Act or even the Constitution says if your arrest falls within a weekend or public holiday or what, the 48 hours expires, you must be brought to court on the next working day, as soon as possible.
Yes.
When it's possible. So he was in court on Monday, just a few hours, because he appeared in court at 12 midday, and courts don't set time that you will apply at midday. They will tell you to be in court at 8:30, and they will start with other cases, postponements. He appeared in court, and I think the magistrate was wrong to say 48 hours has expired. But there's another element. There's an immigration element. The Immigration Act requires Home Affairs police, what do they call immigration, what do you call them, immigration agents or police, because Home Affairs has policemen, immigration police. It requires them, even SAPS, to read you your rights when you are arrested. First of all, when Home Affairs picked up that Omotoso doesn't have a valid visa or has a fake work permit in South Africa, whatever it is that he transgressed with, the Immigration Act requires Home Affairs or the arresting people to, one, must have approached the person first, fresh, to have informed you that your visa has expired, or you are in South Africa illegally, or you are using your visitor's visa to conduct business, whatever the reason. The law requires the authorities to inform you first, in writing. They can call you and follow it by e-writing. They failed to do that. They rushed to arrest him.
Don't you think a lot of the showiness of the whole process is because how people are riled up already about the charges being dropped?
But if you are a law enforcer or you're a government entity, you don't have to feel the pressure of the community, which is not informed, because this arrest had nothing to do with the rape trial where he was acquitted. The Home Affairs officials who did it, they were not supposed to be under pressure and rush quickly to arrest Omotoso for a totally different charge. They were supposed to follow procedure. The procedure is they should have written to Omotoso, maybe when they became aware. Courts always ask, when did you become aware that this person has transgressed immigration rules? They should have informed him. It's very clear that I did consular services for 13 years of my life. Inform the person your passport has expired, or your visa, or your work permit, or you are using a home permit for the job you are doing.
And aren't you supposed to present yourself to your nearest Home Affairs to explain yourself?
Part of that letter is to invite the person to say, come and renew and explain to us why you are late. And Omotoso had reasons. I was in prison. You know, he could have went there and explained. But I think because they knew he has a valid reason why his permit has expired, he's here illegal. Then they tried to use a backdoor thing. And again, why would the South African government, when the Department of Justice, now these are two government departments. One is Justice, led by Mamoloko Kubai. One is Home Affairs, led by Schreiber of the DA. This one has indicated that they are going to file, that's Justice, they're going to file for the Omotoso rape trial for review, what do you call it, for appeal. Okay, they've indicated.
In fact, the NPA in the Eastern Cape did say that they are appealing the judgment. Yes.
Good. This one decided to arrest Omotoso while this other department is processing the appeal. They decided to arrest Omotoso for what? Immigration activities. And you know what does the Immigration Act says? If you are arrested in South Africa for being an illegal immigrant, you are deported. So the South African government, through Home Affairs, if the court did not throw the case out on Monday or Tuesday of Omotoso for lack of following processes, the Home Affairs would have deported Omotoso. And let me tell you, Omotoso's deportation is going to be an easy one, because we know that he doesn't have to go and settle in hell and we feed him for a few weeks. We know that he's Nigerian. And I said, they know where to find him. Imagine they deport him to Nigeria. Do we have an extradition treaty with Nigeria? Or Omotoso, in arriving in Nigeria, decide to go to another country because he's a free man, a country where we don't have extradition treaty. So we are going to go through a process of when the NPA and Justice finally got successful in the leave to appeal, then they will have to look for omotoso all over the world and extradite or apply for extradition of omotoso back to South Africa. It is a very costly exercise. It depends where omotoso would be. It's also costly, not only financially, but diplomatically, because we may have a treaty or diplomatic relations with the particular country where he will be, either his own country of residence or a visitor somewhere. Maybe we don't have a treaty. Then we must engage like we're engaging in the Bushiri case. I don't think it was wise for the government departments. One is busy with the criminal process, another one decides to implement an immigration process. Where is the talking between the two government departments? It is the sign again, fresh for me, that this GNU, whether you call it coalition or cooperation or coordinated, it's not coordinated. When one minister does something, another one does something. How can Minister Schreiber not know that Minister Kubayi is in a process with Shamila Batoi, the NPA head, to can recharge this person, rearrest him? I don't say it was going to be easy. There's another element of them. They must go and convince the court. Another interesting thing that I learned from lawyers this week. You know, if they go and become successful in relaunching the Omotoso criminal trial, they can't bring any new evidence from what was presented already.
Oh, yes.
They can't. Whatever was discussed, they are stuck with it. If they want to bring any other new evidence, they will have to apply to the court for condonation to bring new evidence. And why do they want to do that? We are talking another 8 years, my brother.
Yeah.
And this is where our courts are failing. That's why people are saying our courts are failing us. But again, it's not the courts. Omotoso has used the loopholes in the law to be in South Africa illegally, to be free men, to still go to church. And majority of those church members, 80 to 90% are women. This man is accused of rape and molesting women. And I saw women standing up defending Omotoso Kadibono. You know, I'm saying it in Sesotho, not literally. You understand? And it's a sad state of affairs. Again, it's the mind. It's how our mind. You know, if my daughter goes to a church and I hear that the pastor is sexually abusing girls, the first thing that will come to mind, whether it's true or not, it will be to talk my daughter out of that church. Understand? The first, just to play a safe game, whether it's true or not, if you have a child going to a school and a principal or the teachers are said to be molesting those kids, whether boys or girls, the first thing you will do as a responsible parent is to pull your child out of that risk. You are mitigating the risks already. No, not in this country. The people of that church are defending an alleged rapist. Women, I must be specific, women. I saw the ANC Women's League in the Eastern Cape saying they are shocked how women are swearing at them, insulting them for wanting to deal with. That one is not Papa. What do they call it?
But it's like that with churches across the planet, though, that the church leader can't do wrong. The church leader is a victim. The church leader has been stitched up because there's no way our church leader did any of this. So for me, it's not unusual human behavior to see someone's flock defending their shepherd.
Well, Fresh, it's unusual when there is evidence in front of you. One of your church members, a woman or two or three, stand up and say, this person has not done that.
Yeah, but someone is going to argue that, but you guys want the downfall of our Papa.
Our elder, you were
sent. Who sent you? The devil sent you. Hence, I'm saying, nothing surprises me about human behavior, especially when it comes to standing up for people. You even see it in politics. You look at the MAGA crew in the U.S.
Yes, yes.
You could catch Trump in the act of whatever transgression. They're going to say it's fake news.
Yeah.
Fake news media, you're out for Trump. That's what supporters do.
Oh, you're a disgruntled former member.
So don't be surprised by human behavior when it comes to blind loyalty. That's what we do.
Well, I wish our lawmakers can use the opportunity of revising the Constitution to change some of the laws of this country. And
which laws would we be changing?
The immigration law needs to change. I'm one of the people who have commented on this opportunity of committing the Constitution to say, let us harden our immigration laws. Let us go and pass a law in Parliament. Unfortunately, we will need a two-thirds majority to change our immigration law so that the NGOs, the Americans, and everybody else, and the rapist pastors, alleged whatever, cannot come and stay here at our expense and comfortably because our immigration law and our Bill of Rights is a problem in South Africa. Our constitution, when it comes to Bill of Rights, it was made to protect the white minorities moving from apartheid era to the so-called democracy. It was made to protect the white minority because remember, the South African constitution protects minority rights. So it was intended to be, but now all other people, including criminals, have come to take advantage of that. It is not working for us as a nation. And as now, I was debating with some colleagues who said the politicians, for example, the MPs are the only people who can amend that law, who can vote, but they want us to make contributions. Tato, can you tell me, in the plus minus 60 million South Africans, I bet less than a million will make suggestions to the amendment of the Constitution. More than half of the MPs of South Africa, they do not even understand the law or the constitution. More than half. So how do we expect the voters to go and make comments? Understand? Let me tell you the mistake politicians did. When they campaign for elections, they go door to door, they knock, they go to villages, they drink tea, they do all the funny things, they even do washing and sleep in a squatter camp. None of them today takes an opportunity that there's a 2 month time frame open for the constitution to be amended, to take that constitution, go to the townships, go to the unemployed graduates, and tell them what's your comment, help them to fill that form and submit it so that we have more number and more opinions. But even if that happens, it goes to the MPs who know fuck all about the law. Fuck all, they don't understand anything. I saw this week, and I was surprised that this came from Karl Niehaus of the EFF. MPs, Tato, this week, MPs are calling for the return of Yanuso Walus and who else, and Shabir Shaikh, for reopening those cases to say the man was not released correctly and he's not conducting himself as a parolee while he's in Poland.
He's gone.
He's gone, bruh. It is the same MPs who wrote, what do you call it, the deportation laws.
Yes.
Or what, not even deportation, what do you call it when you are in paroles? It's those MPs. It is that committee, that same committee.
Yeah.
That few members of that committee are saying this thing must be revisited of Yanuso Walus. Same people. They are the ones who voted for these laws. They are the ones who endorsed them and rubber stamped them. They are the ones who allowed Yanuso Walus to leave. They want to come a year after Yanuso Walus have left and tell us that it was a mistake. Nonsense. And whenever I say our MPs are, you know, they are idiotism that I see in Parliament, it's disgusting. I'm actually disgusted that MPs who let Yanuso Walus to leave this country, they want to come and tell us that we must apply for extradition of Yanuso. At whose cost? At whose money? At whose emotions?
And on what grounds?
On what grounds?
What are we going to say to the polls?
Exactly. What are we going to do? For what? I think they are because it's time for local elections, they're starting to say, no, it is the Zuma admin or the ANC that led them. Therefore, now we, the DN Patriotic Alliance, we want to bring him back. That's absolute nonsense. You are all MPs. You are 400, over 201 of you voted for this man to leave the country. You passed the law. There was no voting in Parliament, but they passed the law on how people should. The same committee of Parliament passed that law, took it and presented it in front of the National Assembly, and it was voted into law. Not the same people who do that, they want to come and tell us as citizens and residents of this country to say, we must bring this guy back. So, fortunately, it's Groeneval there. I'm glad that it's a Freedom Fund Plus a minister who must deal with this, you understand? And then you look at Home Affairs, they also want to change the laws of ID cards. Again, same MPs, they voted yes back. I told in the past that we have two types of IDs in South Africa. One is written resident, one is written citizen.
Yes.
So the resident one is for people who have permanent residence here. Yes. So you will have a South African ID. Does not mean you are a citizen. It means you are a resident. It's a green ID book. When the ID card, what do you call the smart cards, were brought in, Parliament took a decision to say smart cards will be issued only to citizens. They obviously had reasons, okay? It started the process. Now we are going to local government elections.
But which doesn't make sense, though, because for whatever reason you saw a need for a smart card ID.
Yes.
Because the green barcoded ID was easy to forge.
Yes.
Is the same reason you should have overhauled every single green ID book.
Why didn't they do that?
Hence I'm
at
asking.
That time?
Hence I'm asking.
That's madness. And actually, they should have even taken advantage of issuing the cards to regulate those with fake IDs.
Exactly.
They should have taken advantage of that.
Because then you would have closed the door.
You would have closed the door. They can even make their ID card to look different by color or something. Must not look too, to be able to differentiate.
Between PR and citizen.
Exactly. Yeah. You understand? They failed to do that. Now because of their failures, Schreiber comes, it's eve of the elections. He wants to show the DA that we are working with the people and say to foreign nations.
We're digitizing everything.
We are digitizing everybody. And again, it's costing us as a nation time, money, emotions. And we have government officials sitting at Home Affairs. It does not have to take a new minister because President Ramaphosa may have shuffled the cabinet now, and Schreiber may leave and go and replace somebody somewhere. What are we going to say? Is that project going to collapse? And our MPs, our lawmakers, our representatives are continuing to fail us. And that's why I never believe in voting and democracy, because it shows that the kind of airheads we are putting there to write laws. And we cry after when we give pen and paper to airheads or tablets to write our laws. When they write nonsense, we come and we cry the law and the justice system is not fair on us. When we put airheads there.
But you can't call people airheads.
No, an airhead, it's an English term. If you're an airhead, you're an airhead. Let me tell you who's an airhead. It's somebody who last year says Yanus can go home. And then after 6 months, you say Yanus must come back. You're an airhead. You can't think.
But the law said Yanus can go home.
Who wrote the law? Who passed that law? Who voted for that law? Who? The same people that are saying Yanus must come back. And that's where, if it was a different person, it's the lawmakers, it's the political parties. Whether MPs change or not, the political parties, they don't change in South Africa, they actually increase. Understand? It's the same people, and I don't have respect for them, by the way.
Sure.
Absolutely not, because they are failing the people. The law is not failing the people, the lawmakers.
Speaking of parliament, the ANC wants parliament to investigate a trip by the DA, the PA, and the ACDP, who went on a fact-finding mission to Israel. And that trip happened quietly, nyana.
When did this happen?
It was a couple of weeks ago. You had no idea?
No.
They went on a fact-finding mission.
As political parties?
I think, they claim they were invited in their capacity as individuals.
No, man, it doesn't work like that.
And not as members of parliament. But surely...
Oh, okay. They are invited as individuals.
Yes,
but surely... As independent parties or persons.
But surely DECO should have been alerted of such, though.
If DECO is doing a job or Home Affairs, look, alerted by who?
By the parties.
They don't have to.
But as a member of the South African parliament, surely you must say, we have been invited by such and such a nation that we have taken to a court.
No.
No? You must do it as you please.
If you go, for example, if parliament is in recession.
Yes.
And they have this break. I don't know what when it's time for them to go to constituencies. I forgot what it's called.
But they're in recess.
They even get money.
Yes.
From parliament to go and now talk to your constituency. You are in recess. You are now talking to... If your constituency is sitting in Israel and you are a DA, they call them shadow minister of foreign affairs, and you go to Israel to engage your constituency that's there, you don't owe parliament an explanation unless it was an officially sanctioned trip.
Okay.
You understand? I've said before, when politicians travel outside the country and use their private passports and their resources, they do not owe each other an explanation. If the African National Congress is rising and saying they must be investigated, I always advise them, and they just never listen. You must first check which passport did they use to travel. If you find that they use the official passport, bam, you're done with them. Because you are not allowed to leave the country with an official passport. Even to leave, the immigration official at the airport, when they left, should have asked them, where are you going? We are going to Israel. What are you going to do with the official passport? We are going for an official invitation. Can I see the invitation letter? They've done it for me. On me, Lesotho, here, not far. Botswana, they stopped me at the airport. I had to open my laptop and show immigration official that I'm going for an official engagement in Botswana. You understand? Before in arriving in Israel, the Israeli immigration will ask them, what are you here for? We are here on official invitation. Here's our official passports or diplomatic passports, and here's the invitation letter. If that was the case, then the ANC has a leg to call for this investigation. If they took their private passports, their private money, and they went for Israel, there's nothing we can do. We can just make a political noise to say you are part of the GNU, yet you go and you engage with Israel, a state that we are having a diplomatic embargo with. That's all they can do politically. To say you are engaging with the enemy of South Africa while you are part of the South African government. But again, I'll forever say this. This is one of the signs that the government of national uselessness, it is not working. If three parties can leave the government and they are members of the GNU and go out, and especially main members like the DA, and go and engage the state of Israel.
How does the fact-finding mission? Clearly, nothing else they've read makes sense. They want to see for themselves.
And the ANC is playing with fire. I'll tell you why, and I've said it before. The ANC has been engaging with Russia as a friend of the African National Congress and regarded as a friend of South Africa. They've engaged at political party level. They've engaged as government when Russia is under a trade and economic embargo and political embargo. There's a warrant of arrest from the ICC for President Putin, and we continue to engage President Putin. So they can't play double standards.
Okay. So you're saying there's a double standard?
I see it as a double standard.
The minute they raise it.
Look, the Patriotic Alliance and the DA have, I don't know what is the third party, have always been clear about
ACDP.
Oh, Reverend Mishra, it is not part of the GNU. But they've always been clear about their love for Israel and support for the state of Israel. So why are we surprised when they engage in? I don't say it's correct. I'm saying we can't be playing double standards. You can't expect your opposition not to engage with countries that fund them, that take care of them, that are friends with. You cannot. I mean, that's cheap politicking. For me, if they want to catch these people, they must check which passports they traveled with. And then it will give President Ramaphosa, what he did with Simelani and the other year with Ndabeni during lockdown. Slap on their face, cut their salary for 3 months. Or even suspend them, or even say you are engaging with the enemy of South Africa, therefore I'm reshuffling the cabinet, or I'm firing you. When they appoint ministers, they've got this thing of saying, in terms of the powers vested in the president, I'll appoint whoever I want. What is them to fire or discipline? They forget that in terms of the powers, I'm allowed to can reshuffle you.
Yeah, the power is there.
Power is there, but use it only on one side when you defeat your political rivals.
You know my thing with this trip for me?
I didn't even know about the trip.
Is have the courage of your convictions. Have the balls to stand up and say, no, we went because we wanted to go. But to say it was a fact-finding mission that clearly is also a PR opportunity because of the people who've taken you there, then own up to it. Don't say you're on a fact-finding mission because you're being sent to where you're going to be shown Israelis and Arabs living hand in hand.
Yes,
they're going to
yes.
show you what they want you to see. You know, I was actually invited to Israel by a similar group. They're like friends of Israel or whatever, but it's a similar group.
Okay.
They wanted to invite a whole bunch of us. on a trip to go see, visit a kibbutz, look at the technological developments there, and also see Arabs and Israelis living side by side. And my one question was, will I get to go to the West Bank and Gaza? Because for me, then I have an idea of the bigger picture. Because otherwise, then you're expecting me to be a part of your PR blitz, because then you're going to say I must post about the trip. And I must tell people how it was nice,
how the Israelis, things are good.
And I was like, if there's no West Bank in Gaza, I'm kishab.
Yeah,
so I was left out of that trip.
But Tato, one, you have a political consciousness. That's the one element. Two, you were invited to come and play PR. And not for you to conduct your business or to be a DJ or to play or what, you understand? So normally a person who's politically conscious and who's well-vested in geopolitics will not accept that, you understand? So it's a challenge for people who are dependent on the aid from that. And these political parties, it was very clear during the 2024 election or prior to that, that Israel is somehow funding the Patriotic Alliance. You remember the incident when they were invited to their embassy in Tshwane, and they went into publicity and photo shooting and all that. There's nothing wrong in taking money from whoever presents money to me, but there's everything wrong in you not telling the truth. That's what you are saying.
But hence I'm saying, have the courage of your convictions.
Yeah, but do you expect courage and conviction and ethics from politicians? And then my brother,
you know, this group even met President Herzog.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
No, I'm not.
No, they must invite me next time. I'll cause a storm there. I'll be deported very quickly.
I don't think they'll let you leave the airport to go there in the first place. Yeah. We're out of time, but Pan-Africanism, a conference of 1945, is celebrating 80 years this year.
Yes.
Quickly, why was there a Pan-Africanism conference in 1945, and why should we care 80 years later?
Let me start by saying why that topic was important for me. We are in the month of May, and May is very critical. First things first, it's my birthday month. That makes it more important than anything else on earth. Secondly, Robert Mangale Sosobukwe, the founder of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, was released from prison 56 years ago on the 13th of May. So this past week, it was an anniversary of the release of Sobukwe. And thirdly, May is the African month. It's the African Independence and Celebration Month. And why in May, and why this 8-year celebration? The 1945 Pan-Africanism Conference, which took place in Manchester, the U.S., it was not the first. It had happened, it was the fifth, actually. It had happened from 1900, 1911, 1920-something, and 30-something, then 1945. The reason why the 1945 one was very critical for the Pan-Africanists in the world, domestically in Africa and in diaspora, it is because it is the one that took a decision led by W.E.B. Du Bois to say Africans must rally and unite themselves from all over and form Pan-Africanist movements all over the African continent. Its main purpose was to decolonize Africa and to stop, because at that time in the early 1900s, slaves were still being traded and used, and to stop the trade, transfers to also bring Africa into the map against racism. And Africans had to stand up and rise, whether domestically. And in Africa, we fortunately had at that time Dr. Kwame Nkrumah being part of that conference that took that decision. People were saying, how do Pan-Africanists or Africans go and meet in London? And all those conferences had happened in Europe because of those who were in diaspora. So what the colonialists were doing, and imperialists, they were taking people abroad, educate them, brainwash them, and tell them to stay there because it's bad in Africa. But there were few exceptions who, after being educated, and they were all off, they contributed funds to say, let us organize each other from all over the world. We are divided. And that's when you know, Pan-Africanist movement was born after the 1945 event, and that's where we had the Pan-Africanist Congress of Ghana,
sure.
And we have the Patrice Lumumbas and the Julius Nyereres rising up, being supported by quite a number of Pan-Africanists from all over the world. Mm-hmm. So it is important that it coincide with the release of Sobukwe, who was actually never released.
Yes.
You know, I brought this up because this week there was a very important event in Galeshewe. You know, there's a bunch of youth in Galeshewe who have revitalized Sobukwe's office, where he started studying and practicing law. Mm. It's now a library.
Mm.
It has information that I wish the media, I saw SABC flat it, but not the content, can actually go and extract information. Who was Mangaliso Sobukwe?
Yes.
Why was Sobukwe? Somebody argued with me. They nearly threw beer on my face when I said, by the way, Robert Sobukwe was the only political prisoner in South Africa.
Mm.
And I'm telling the truth. You can go to Wits University, the archives. They are there. You can go to the apartheid regime records. You don't get the voice of Sobukwe, his writings. You only get who was Sobukwe, the only man on earth who had a clause, made and voted in parliament that he must perpetually be jailed. He was the only political prisoner. He was the only one who was declared a political prisoner. All others were criminals. All from ANC, PAC, ASAPO, whoever, they were recorded as criminals because of their activity to overthrow the government. So it's a criminal activity.
Sure.
But when it comes to politics, only Mangaliso Sobukwe was declared a political prisoner. Only him had an act of parliament passed, a law, a special clause in the law that says he must be jailed and retained in jail until he died or until they fed him glass and killed him.
Sure.
So again, people were saying, why don't we as Pan-Africanists do what the ANC is doing, opening an inquest about what killed Sobukwe in 1978, actually? Why was he the most feared political prisoner or black person in South Africa? And what killed him? You know what I said to Pan-Africanists? It's not worth it, guys. What we can do, we can do what Ibrahim Traore is doing. We can tell people about Sobukwe. We can teach people about Sobukwe. We can tell the truth about Sobukwe. One of the truths that people don't know, a professor at Wits, remember, Sobukwe was a professor of African languages at Wits. When he was supposed to resume his duties after being conditionally released, I mean, this man is born in Graaf Reinet. I don't know what it's called now. He gets banished to Kimberley, Galeshewe. And you must have seen how Mayor Veronica Sobukwe was explaining that even when he was released and banished to Galeshewe, the restrictions that Sobukwe was to talk to his wife and kids. And the media is not talking about this. It's our duty as Pan-Africanists to tell the people about the abuse of Sobukwe, the killing of Sobukwe, and why was Sobukwe had a clause that every time he's released, he gets released in the morning, in the afternoon, he gets arrested.
Yes, sir.
You understand? He serves 5 years in jail. When he's released, as he walks out of the Robben Island gate, they arrest him again. And our kids are not being taught this. Mm-hmm. You remember last week I said to you, we must start pushing for Pan-Africanism and black consciousness to be subject at school, subjects of choice. You will see how many families will go. I'm convinced many families will allow their children.
Yeah, they'll opt in.
To opt in. Yeah. Trust me, they will. And in celebration of Prof, and I will never forget that one of the professors at Wits, Baizos, was a professor at Wits. Do you know that it's on record that Professor Baizos of Wits University connived and collaborated with the apartheid regime? Sadly, after they used him, they released the information that Sobukwe must never be released, that Sobukwe must never take a position at Wits. They allowed him to be a professor, but then they exiled him somewhere in Mpumalanga. That's how much the man was feared. Our children, our people, even adults, must start digging and asking questions. Why was Robert Sobukwe such a feared person? And he was a Christian. He was a very religious man. His best friend was Benjamin Pogrun, a white man.
Yeah.
And the apartheid government now tells and teaches our kids that Sobukwe was racist, Sobukwe didn't like white people, Sobukwe was violent, Sobukwe led to the massacre of the Sharpeville 1960 campaign.
Yes.
That's what our kids are told. They are not being told that Sobukwe believed in peaceful resistance, Sobukwe believed in love for Africans, Sobukwe believed in rallying and uniting the African people under the banner of Pan-Africanism. They're not teaching our kids that.
Mm-hmm.
But I am going to make it. Now, unfortunately, I'm not in a space to write books, but to give lectures and to talk more about Sobukwe and who is Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe, because I thought his foundation, which is led by his son, will do more. I don't think they're doing more. Especially when I started, I'm not saying anything negative about the son, but when I started seeing him aligning himself with the Thabo Mbeki's foundation, with this group that says we need a dialogue, we don't have time for dialogues. We can't talk dialogues when we don't put the truth on the table. The apartheid regime silenced Sobukwe. The ANC-led government to this day, they've silenced Sobukwe. None of us have heard the voice of Sobukwe. You know, I turned 53 yesterday. I've never heard the voice of Sobukwe, the most feared person, the leader of the Pan-Africanist Congress. I haven't. And you can't tell me that the man who took this country by storm, nobody has heard his voice, no tape, no recording, somewhere nyana. It's impossible for us.
It's almost like he's been deleted from history.
Actually, that's what we are saying.
Yeah.
They are trying to delete Sobukwe from the history of this country and the role he played as the liberator. They're trying to delete it. But I'm saying, let us not waste time with commissions of inquiry. The same government that is deleting Sobukwe, not helping us to bring the voice of Sobukwe up, we want them to open a commission of inquiry to the death of Sobukwe. We don't have to. We have to have Sobukwes popping up.
Sure.
A number of Sobukwes must start rising. People must start being the Sobukwes of today. They killed one man. Millions of Sobukwes must come out of this country and this continent to say who was Mangaliso Sobukwe.
But hopefully, looking at someone like Ibrahim Traore and the traction that he's gaining in the Sahel region and the love he's getting globally, hopefully those will spark, even if it's in just one or two people, a Pan-Africanist pride in who we are, where we come from, and why it's important that Africa stand and stand alone. Yes, collaborate with other people and other nations. But it's very important that Africa says, listen, don't worry, we've got this.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's up to us. That's self-reliance. It's up to Africans, particularly from the still-occupied Azania, South Africa. It has to start here. It doesn't have to be people from West Africa or Zimbabwe or anywhere else who mentions the name so Sobukwe more than us. You look at many documentaries that I've seen over the years, you must see people who are talking about Sobukwe. Most of it's people who are not natives of South Africa.
Sure.
They are from other African countries and in diaspora. They even talk about this man as if he was not one of us. And we are very silent about the role that Mangaliso Sobukwe played. And one of the biggest roles, and the ANC can run away with it, but because it's Sobukwe they want. You know, after the 1945 Pan-Africanism Congress in Manchester, the one we spoke about, in 1949, the ANC Youth League at that time adopted a program of action, the Youth League, the 1949 program of action. Then they gave it to the mother body. So the Sobukwes, the Motupengs, the Mandelas, and they took it to Anton Muzwake Limbere, who was the president of the ANC at that time. This program of action to say, mother body, this is what you must do. You know who was the author of that document? It was Sobukwe. That's why the ANC today, they will never mention. He was a member of the Youth League. He co-authored the program of action that led, and again, this is where I tell real politics. The 1949 program of action by the Youth League under Muzwake Limbede, President Muzwake Limbede, led to the Freedom Charter being birthed.
Yeah.
Because when the oppressors and the imperialists and the white supremacists realized that the Sobukwes and the Africanists in the ANC are running with this thing, then they drafted the Freedom Charter in 1953. And in 1955, they made those who were softer, you understand, in the ANC to adopt the Freedom Charter against the Pan-Africanist Program of Action. That is what led to the breakdown between the Africanists in the ANC and then the Charterists who were born in 1955. And most of us, or some of us, will even say the PAC is actually the real ANC, because in 1959, 4 years after, when the PAC was launched, they adopted the program of action of the ANC of 1949. That gave birth to the Pan-Africanist Manifesto in 1959. And this is the disjuncture that if people can understand that actually the PAC is the real ANC. But the ANC was being led or misled and funded and loved by the imperialists and the oppressors.
Yes, sir.
So this is a very great month, Thato, for Africans. You know, May the 25th is Africa Day. This is where we should celebrate our continent. I've already mentioned the important day. I've already mentioned the 1945 decision. Why 1945?
Yeah.
And some of this most important thing. Another one, let's give credit to the ANC. People must not think I'm anti-ANC. Nelson Mandela was inaugurated on the 10th of May in 1994. And I formed part of the team that was responsible for the inauguration.
Yes,
so May is very important. Whether it's historical or it's coincident, the month of May is very important in the history of the Republic of South Africa and the continent at large.
Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you, my brother.
53 has never looked so good.
I look good for 53.
I know, you're rocking 53.
Driver is going to be jealous. No, thank you, my brother. It's a quite silent week here.
Yes, sir. Dope chat as always.
And
please get involved. Please take part. We'd love your comments, your thoughts, your views. Share the links, like, subscribe, and forward as many links as you want. Where do we find you online, sir?
Yeah, and thanks. I thought about it last night. One thing has changed. I've realized a lot of people are sending me WhatsApp into the number that I've given, but it's just the call. Actually, please, viewers and followers, if you WhatsApp and WhatsApp only, use the number 083-884-7787, and it's only for WhatsApps. I don't take calls. I would rather not take calls. Then the email remains botsangm@gmail.com, and for social media handles is @botsangm.
And if you're WhatsApping, is to order yourself a copy of his book.
Oh, yes.
Nothing else. He's not looking. He's not in the market, on the market.
Don't be my Paxman customer. I'm looking. I'm kidding, yes. It's to order the copy of the book or to discuss Politrics.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you for watching this episode of Wow, What a Week! #Politrics with Botsang Modimo Memuilwa. Coming to you from downtown Johannesburg, we are out at Amped Studios, where almost 100 podcasts a week are recorded. Yours could be next. Shout out Trevor and the crew at Pezulu Works for the cinematography, and also to the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out YBF for all of the behind the scenes shooting and content, and to our executive producer, Gelitso Mudisa King. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.